Thanks for tuning into my new show, Get U.S. Market Ready with Italian Wine People. I'm Steve Ray, author of the book, How to Get U.S. Market Ready. And in my previous podcast, I shared some of the lessons I've learned from 30 years in the wine and spirits business, helping brands enter and grow in the U.S. market. This series will be dedicated to the personalities who have been working in the Italian wine sector in the U.S., their experiences, challenges, and personal stories. I'll uncover the roads that they walked, shedding light on current trends, business strategies, and their unique brands.
This episode is proudly sponsored by Vivino, the world's largest online wine marketplace. The Vivino app makes it easy to choose wine. Enjoy expert team support, door-to-door delivery, and honest wine reviews to help you choose the perfect wine for every occasion. Vivino. Download the app on Apple or Android and discover an easier way to choose wine.
Hi, this is Steve Ray, and welcome to this week's edition of Get U.S. Market Ready with Italian Wine People on the Italian Wine Podcast. My guest this week is an old friend in the industry, somebody who has a great reputation in Italian wine, Nunzio Castaldo, who is head of Panabianco Wines now and also had a very long career building the Italian wine portfolio with Winebo. Nunzio, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve, and hello to everyone that's listening. Yes, my name is Nunzio Castaldo, and I started in the business about 35 years ago. My career is very, I would say, like strange, because I only work with the two companies in these years. One is Winebo, and the other one is Panabianco Wines. I worked for Winebo organization for 32 years almost, and since 2017 or 18 actually, I acquired a small company called the Panabianco, now Panabianco Wines.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about Panabianco, just kind of an overview of the kinds of wines you handle, the number, the type of business that you do, where you do it, and so forth.
Gladly. Panabianco Wines is a small company. It's what they consider a boutique wine company. Panabianco Wines was founded by a gentleman that now has passed, Livio Panabianco, which I had a great respect, and I admired him for his sense of scouting and tastings and palates. Panabianco was founded, as I said, 25 years ago, has been always based in New York City. For the past 24 and a half years, only distribute and imported Italian wines. Now, Panabianco is a little bit different since I acquired the company. We are distributing also non-Italian wines in New York and New Jersey directly with our sales force. We have a selection of Italian wines that we bring outside the borders of these two states. And presently, we are about 12 or 13 states that, you know, that where we consider third-party distributors.
And what states were to the West Coast, or are they concentrated on the Northeast and Atlantic?
Mostly on the East Coast. You know, we would like to consolidate first the East Corridor, what we call. So we are in New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Kentucky, Illinois, Missouri, Florida, and soon we're going to be in the middle of the Mid-Atlantic. We're also in D.C., but we're organizing a little bit better the D.C., Maryland.
Okay, talk a little bit about the on-off-premise mix. I mean, early on, you guys, I believe, were very on-premise focused, and obviously that business has taken a big hit. How have you pivoted and responded to that, and what impact has that had on the business?
Great question. I have to say that, you know, that when the pandemic forced us to have the first lockdown, March 2020, we were really in a dark hole, because our revenue was responsible for 80% on-premise and 20% off-premise. That is the direct distribution. And that time, we had only two distributors and not almost 12 like now. So it was a very scary moment for the company. But we reorganized ourselves. We brought in some brands that would be more useful for the off-premise. And little by little, we ramped up to from 20 to 40% on the off-premise, and now we are 60% on on-premise. So that really saved us from this very deep curve that we had in our business.
What were the criteria used for deciding which brands to bring in to ramp up this off-premise part of the business?
The criteria was very, I would say, articulated, because we couldn't really bring in wines that, you know, that they were less expensive what we had, because our reputation was, and it still is, a hub of brands, wines, that they are unique, rare, and true to the territory. And that's why we like to work with the producers that, you know, that they're involved with the farming, that are biodynamic or organic or sustainability process. So we had to go to, you know, to brands like that, as our mission is, it is what it is. But we basically changed a little bit of the, you know, the search, meaning that we had, you know, we went after commodity wines. So Sangiovese, Chianti Classico, Chianti DOCG, Pinot Grigio, and then after that, Prosecco, and Nero d'Avola, Greco, and so on, and Falanghina. But always kept the same type of approach, going to the current producers that we had, or a new one, and say, we would like to have these wines, if you have it with organic process, rather than go and have a discounts. Because at the end of the day, there's going to be always someone that it will be less expensive than you, you know, and that is a lost war in our world.
Okay, interesting. So following on that point, we've talked about the impact that this whole the COVID thing has had on your industry. What do you see as the changes that are happening in the industry overall, not just the ones that impact you, and are factoring into where you're planning to take the company in the future?
Well, that is a million-dollar question. Obviously, the future, you know, for us at this moment, especially for organizations like ours, which they are still connected to families and to employees that, you know, that more passionate than, you know, than salespeople. I would say that, you know, that we want and we would like to be still focused on what we believe in it. So, representing families, terroirs, varietals, as I said before, that, you know, that we can bring to the American people with, you know, with that kind of a diversity that only the Italian Italian territory we can represent. Our goal is to really be a little bit more focused on the pockets of the market, and I explain what I mean by that. We know that, you know, that our portfolio is performing very well in Brooklyn, for example, rather than Queens. Or, you know, Austin rather than, I don't know, Los Angeles. So we like to, you know, to really, you know, close that kind of distance from us as a distributor to the final consumer, or us as an importer to a distributor that can understand what really means the Pane Bianco wines selection. The future, I believe that, you know, that we needed to really looking at is to get closer and closer to the final consumer.
So building on that, I believe this is going to air on the first day of Wine to Wine 2021. And I'm going to be giving a presentation on e-commerce and direct-to-consumer. And one of the fundamental principles that I've seen, the trend is, it's not going around the three-tier system because everything has to go through the three-tier system. But the responsibility of marketing products and communicating to the retailers and ultimately to the consumers through all the new tools that we have, whether it's through e-commerce or wine-oriented websites or food and wine-oriented websites, has really changed the game. And I've identified like 7 different categories of how all this stuff manifests itself with probably 10 different suppliers in each of those categories. And I know we have a lot of listeners from Italy and certainly overseas that they find the U.S. complicated and difficult now, with e-commerce entering the lexicon. How are you guys addressing that, and are you dipping your toe in the water?
Thank you for that question. First of all, if somebody's is confused and is very, I would say, scared about the American market, should read your book. You know, because it's a very self-explanatory, and kudos to you that, you know, that you put together such a beautiful explanations. But still, is a very difficult to penetrate in this in this market, even though it's the number one market for Italian wines at this point, especially for certain type of wines. So we have the kind of responsibility as Italian producer to look at this market in every single, you know, perspective possible, and catch, you know, the minimum opportunity to get in, because only if you are in this market, you are part of the export, the design that you have for your company. That is what I will say to a producer. The other thing that, you know, that is important, thanks to this new, I would say, social media revolution, is that we needed to be, we are more and more closer to the final consumer, as I said before. The consumer that drinks the wine, that buys the wines, and they comment on the wine. That is the key for the next future. You know, I would say that, you know, that according to what we have to respect as an importer and distributors for the three-tier system, I would say protocols, we can do very little to go after that kind of a consumption. So that's why, as I said before, we needed to find the right partners. You know, if he's a distributor, if he's a retailer, or if he's a wine director or somebody that can transport, you know, what we choose to bring in the United States to the table or to the home now of the final consumer. So, yes, it is still something that, you know, that we are trying to mold. But I think that in COVID was an accelerated because that process was already placed and it was already in motion before March 2020.
So one of the ways I like to say it is to get people, normal people who buy wine, to tell your story in their words to their friends. I mean, that's what social media is all about, the recommendation of someone you know or someone who has some legitimacy or accreditation, not necessarily academic, but seems to know what they're talking about. There's a million different tools out there to do it, everything from informing them on dedicated sites like Vivino or Wine Searcher or VinePair, as well as the e-com only sites like wine.com and Paul Mabray is starting on a new one called Pix, which I'm very interested in. But it's really upsetting kind of the way things are going. What kind of reaction do you hear from retailers with this change in responsibility in who to communicate with and how?
Well, it's a very interesting question because when you go to, and I said before, you know, pockets of the market, you know, that is the key now. When you go to downtown, for example, you see that, you know, that there is a small wine shop that, you know, that takes pride of what selects for the shelf, for the shelves or for his customers. Those kind of stores, you know, that the hands-on stores, they're still performing well because they have the time, they have the culture, and they have the habits to explain about the wines. The big one, they are organizing with the different tools, you know, with Drizzlies, for example, a wine bar, or all those platforms that, you know, that allows them to be exposed, you know, to many, many, many ways and in many locations and even distance locations. Now, you know, we never really imagined, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, and Steve and I, we can say that very freely, that Uber could ship a bottle of wine to Upper East Side, for example, from a store, you know, especially in the crisis and during the pandemic. Or the restaurants could sell a order of pasta with a bottle of Chianti to go, you know. So things like that, they are changing the concept of how purchasing. Because at the end of the day, the consumer is guided by habits. And they don't want to lose these habits now. So the retailers and also us as an importer and distributor, we have to understand what is going to be the new habits, because that is what will be the disengagement of the old to the new way to make available the wine to the final consumer.
So the word I've heard that describes that is omnichannel, and that's all the conversation that takes place and all the influencing that takes place can happen online, can happen in store, can happen in person, can happen many, many different places, which is separate and apart, but not distinct from the actual purchase. Sometimes somebody could look it up online and go to the store and buy it, or they can do click and collect or any of these varying things, which makes data critically important. You alluded to this earlier in our conversation, the value of real-time data, inventory information, and being able to measure the results of marketing programs that you use. Now, you're not, you know, a huge company like Winebow, which has lots of people and lots of resources to invest in these things. How do you take advantage of new opportunities? And one that I'll use as an example I've been impressed with is CityHive, which powers the e-com side of about 2,500 retailers across the country. We've been doing some pretty interesting programs with that, but a lot of it is related to the fact that you have access to real-time inventory and sales data, and so can react immediately when you're doing programs. Can you comment on that?
All depends on what kind of portfolio you have. And many companies, especially medium and large and extra large sizes, they adapt their portfolio to the target or to the grow of their company into the market. Company like Pane Bianco Wines, and there are hundreds like us in the States, they have to have a different approach. You know, we have to be in the market with the wines that, you know, that they can fit in that segment of maybe, you know, 20 or 25% that we can, get closer, you know, to a customers that, you know, that wants to have his customer having an experience rather than a value wines. And what I mean by that is this: we represent wines from the smallest appellation, like a Faro, you know, in Messina, to the largest one is like, you know, like the Prosecco from Valdobbiadene. In the middle, there are the small producers like Marisa Cuomo, like Nanni Coppè, like Lelusi, like, you know, many of these small producers that they have to be still explained, still tell, still, you know, communicated in different ways.
Hand-sold, but hand-sold in today's reality. It isn't necessarily physically person to person.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So absolutely. And that is, you know, the challenge that we have. And for that reason, our team is really formed by seasoned guys, you know, seasoned reps, seasoned people that they have passion, people that they know the market very well. So they don't have to go through the drill of reaching, you know, the attention of a retailer that wants a $11.99 product. And behind you, there is like a, you know, like a football team that has the same $11.99 wines that, you know, that you're trying to sell it. So our approach is a little different, you know, from the moment that we search to the moment that we sell. And we hope that, you know, that pipeline will finish to a beautiful and great experience for the final consumer.
Well expressed. That was good. Back to one of the earlier points, we skipped over it, but I think it's really important. So your model is essentially in the New York area, self-distribution. So you've got your own sales force of people who are calling on that. Is that because of distributor consolidation? Is that because it's the model that Pano Bianco had before? Or is it because of some other reason that you feel that's the best way to sell your portfolio? Well, obviously, that this is the reason. It's the best way, you think, to sell the portfolio. But it's a different model. And a lot of producers, you know, are looking for an importer and then looking for distributors. And to a lot of degrees, that introduces noise or friction into communication obstacles almost. Can you comment on that, about how you're structured?
Sure, sure. Speaking about the Italian producers, there are thousands of producers that, you know, that they don't have a voice. They don't have a chance to be in the United States markets if they will not be Pane Bianco Wines importer or distributors. And this can be in Portland, Oregon, on Charleston, or anywhere else, you know, between San Francisco and New York. So we take very serious, you know, that kind of message, you know, and project and the business that we want to bring. We have about 48 producers. And maybe only about 10 of those producers, they reach more than, I would say, like 50,000 cases productions. So our target, as I said before, is very clear. You know, we would like to have, first, we want to study the appellation, then the family. You know, we like to work with the multi-generational people in the company. And varietals, you know, that are not very difficult to sell, but they are very, I would say, curious from the consumers now than before. Like Pallagrello Nero, like, I don't know, Casavecchia, or maybe, you know, the Catalanesca from Vesuvio, for example. So that's what we are messaging, you know, and it's very difficult, you know, some time to compete with the big guys, you know, obviously. And I was part of that.
And you know that quite well. You did it for many years.
Maybe, you know, I have a little bit of a Trojan horse in that kind of, you know, system that I can play with. But I like to, you know, to really think that, you know, that Pane Bianco Wines is one of the companies that is still needed, you know, for, first of all, for the producers, but also for the consumers, that once again, I'm going to use a word that is very important, especially nowadays, for the right experience. If they cannot go to Italy, we can bring Italy to them.
Do you want to elaborate? I love that concept. If they can't go to Italy, let's bring Italy to them. How do you do that?
Well, I believe that, you know, that nowadays you can be, you know, sitting in your couch at 11 o'clock at night and scrolling your social media, you know, networks, and it could be anywhere, you know, especially Instagram, and you scroll, you know, scroll and scroll, you know, all those images and videos and of Amalfi Coast, of Capri, or even, you know, Portofino, or even Dolomites, you know, and you want to be there, you know, you miss that because, you know, we've been really gauged, you know, for the past 2 years in this horrible situation, and we cannot wait, you know, to spring out, you know, once again. And that is what, you know, with wines and food and is, you know, a good instrument, you know, a good tools, you know, to use that kind of, or to keep that kind of a link or bridge that kind of a aspiration and desire. So how can you do that? Is well, that is the challenge. We don't have the manpower, you know, to obviously, to, you know, to invest in a big, huge social media marketing, you know, plan. But, you know, at the end of the day, our world, you know, is still about networking. And little by little, you cramp up, you know, and you have more people that, you know, that they like your Marisa Cuomo Furore Bianco, and you built on that. And there are more people that, you know, they like, you know, this Capo di Stato from our Loredana Gasparin with a French Bordeaux style from Italy, and you ramp on that. So it's a day-by-day, bottle-by-bottle business. No,
that part of it hasn't changed, you know? I want to introduce here an interesting story. I didn't participate in it, but somebody told me the story. They were talking to somebody, and they asked them, have you ever been to Italy? And the guy says, why would I want to go to Big Italy? I got Little Italy right here. So to comment on your point about if we can't bring them to Italy, can we bring Italy to them? That's kind of, they brought it along with them as immigrants, and it's established itself kind of as a, you know, Italian in America, as you know, coming from Southern Italy is very different from Italy as it is now, and certainly Italy as it is in all the various regions. A lot of people who eat, you know, red gravy, you never find that in the north, as you know. So. So out of all the things that we talked about, we're kind of running tight on time here, so I want to jump to a conclusion of, is there anything, or what is the one thing somebody could take away from this conversation that they could put to use immediately? Not necessarily run this program or do this, but perhaps a philosophy of how to approach sales of Italian wines in America in a post-COVID world and an internet-driven post-COVID world.
Well, first of all, I would like to give an advice to, you know, to the consumers that are listening to us this morning. During COVID, I received many during COVID, the pandemic, you know, time. I received many calls and says, "Listen, Nuncio, what kind of wine I should taste? You know what we should do? You know, when are we entertaining us and as a family? Blah blah blah." And I advise them in a very simple way. Listen, you want to have a really a good experience and a good, like, you know, fun time, you know, just go online, you know, like I said before, now we have this kind of advancement, go online and buy 6 bottles different than the others, you know, spend between $15 to $25 and 3 whites, 3 reds, you cover the bottles, you open with, you know, with your friend, and you can find, you know, some really cool things, because Italian wines, you know, if all, then, you know, brings one thing, diversity and value. You can spend like $15, $20, $25 and really drink for a bottle of wine that, you know, that you think that is at $50 or $60. The good thing that happened during the pandemic and the staying home time is that, you know, that the consumers now finally, they approach the more expensive wines with less money. You know, and I would like to elaborate on that. You know, the consumers, you know, they went to restaurants to, I don't know, to discover Etna wines or Bulgari wines or even, you know, Barolo and Barbaresco for that matter, you know, and spending, they had to spend between $60 to $160 of a wine, you know, for a bottle of wine. Now, you know, they find out that, you know, they can have the same bottle of wines from $40 to $80. And if you are like, you know, with the two or your roommate or with the two couples in an apartment stuck because you cannot get out, you order the, you know, you order the food and you order the wines that you drank at the restaurants, pay maybe twice or maybe three times. So that it was a good, I would say, training, gym training for the wine palates, you know, because now we elevated the quality and the expertise and the pleasure of your palate. And that is what I was referring before, because at the end of the day, human being doesn't want to give up what he likes, if it's bad, good, or worse. And for your health, you know, or for anything. So, and they are looking now to, you know, to those kind of wines. And they discovered that if they spend $25, you know, $20 for a bottle of wine, let's say like a Sauvignon Blanc from Alto Adige, they discover a new world with the less money. And that is a good thing for us. Good thing for the producers, good thing for, you know, for the Italian wines in general, good thing for importers and distributors and so on. Because, and that's what we need to go to the market with, value and experience, and most of all, diversity.
You used a critical word, and we hear it all the time with all the conversation that's going on the web, is discovery and stories. People want to discover new things. Discover new things to them. Used to be that you could go into a wine and spirits store and ask the guy who may never have been to Italy, but he knows enough to say, well, try this Valanghina, which you never would have heard about, much less have encountered before. I mean, we're pretty lucky because we get to go to all these tastings and taste all of these wonderful wines. And I know a lot of people are jealous about that. But there's plenty to discover outside the range of the 300 or 400 varietals you and I might have done. So discovery is kind of a big thing. And the more we can reinforce discovery by the positioning of information in places that people already gather. So if they're going for an education on wine to VinePair, then getting your messaging on VinePair. Same thing with Wine Searcher. And one of the recommendations I make, kind of answering my own question here, is for everybody to make sure your brands are optimized online. And by that, I mean, look at how your brand appears on Vivino, on Wine Searcher, on VinePair, on even liquor.com and all of these others. Do they have the current vintage? Do they have the correct label? Is it high resolution? Does it appear well? Do you have your current scores? All those kinds of things are things that you can impact and change. And there's a different way to do it for each and every one. So I can't go into that. But the point is, you're responsible for how people see your brand. It's not something that you can delegate to the importer. Now, that puts a lot of burden on you guys as the importer to do that. And I see a lot of people pushing it back to the supplier. But at the end of the day, I think it's a mission critical thing. You need to be, it's the equivalent of a floor display in a liquor store, right? If you see it on the web and the picture is squished because the aspect ratio was wrong, no one's going to buy that wine. And if you didn't know that was happening, you know, that's a barrier to sales.
I agree with you 100%. And that we just, No, but you're an expert as we are, you know, so in this kind of, I would say dynamic that only the United States offers, because, you know, we have a very atypical system here, you know. So importers and the distributors, they have to rely on these filters, you know, if it's retailers or restaurants. But at the end of the day, I do believe that, you know, that Italy has, or Italian wines has a great, great opportunity. We have to always remember that, you know, that for every four bottles that we drink in the United States, three bottles are American wines. and one bottle is from import. And thanks to the Pinot Grigio, Prosecco, and Moscato, you know, out of that bottle, one third is Italian wines. So it's a very difficult that, you know, that you go to a store or your local retailer and you don't see Italian wines. What I encourage, you know, the new consumers is to be a little bit daring. You know, when you find a bottle of, like you say, the Falanghina, or can be Nerello Mascalese, or could be a Cannonau, or even a Grignolino, just take that bottle home. Of course, it cannot be like it, but if you like it, you will discover a new world in front of you, a really new world. And if you do, just you know, put the picture on the on Instagram, and because that is the only way that you can help us as a consumer to bring more and more those wines that, you know, that they are so fun to drink.
Well, thank you for your comments, Nunzio. This has been a special pleasure to talk to you, and an insight into a side of the business not often recognized, as the small guys who really can make a difference in the wine industry in communicating, you know, closer directly to consumers. So I want to thank you for joining me and sharing your time with me. And I look forward to seeing you either in New York or in Italy sometime soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Steve, for inviting me and to give the voice of a small and very dedicated and passionate producers that we're dealing with every day. And thank you all to listening to, you know, to us, because more you listen, more you're curious, and more you drink Italian wines. Arrivederci.
This is Steve Ray. Thanks again for listening on behalf of the Italian Wine Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Italian Wine Podcast celebrates its fourth anniversary this year, and we all love the great content they put out every day. Chin Chin with Italian Wine People has become a big part of our day, and the team in Verona needs to feel our love. Producing the show is not easy, folks. Herding all those hosts, getting the interviews, dropping the clubhouse recordings, not to mention editing all the material. Let's give them a tangible fan hug with a contribution to all their costs. Head to ItalianWinePodcast.com and click donate to show your love.